Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
But don't with fire.
Good morning and welcome to Playing with Fire, Long Island's only food, wine, and lifestyle show. I'm your host, Tom Shortell, and I'm here with co-host, producer, and dear friend, Stu Schrager. Good morning, Stu.
Good morning, Tom. We're live once again.
I know. I'm back. I'm back and better than ever.
That's very cool. You have to tell us about your trip. And I just have a quick question for you, and then that will probably set the stage for today's show.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me when St. Patrick's Day is?
I believe it's March 17th.
It is always March 17th.
Right.
So it's a floating holiday in the sense it could be a Sunday.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
It could be a Saturday. It could be a Wednesday.
What is it this year? I think it's a Monday or something this year. I'm not sure. Paddy's Day, interesting holiday. It's one of the manufactured Hallmark holidays, I think. You know, because there's not a lot of St. Patrick. Other than the Irish thing, I mean, as far as America goes, there's no St. Patrick's history. So it's one of those Hallmark holidays. But yeah, we can get into that. If you want to talk about Paddy's Day in a bit, we can do that. You know, I have some ideas on what to cook and how to do it. So that'd be fun.
But before we get into that, let's hear about your trip. Were you out west? Were you down south?
I was down south. I was down south and out west. I was on the western side of Florida, up on the Panhandle, which I guess is eastern Alabama. And there's a town. What's that town that I go to there? Where do we fly in? Begins with a P. Pensacola. So we fly into Pensacola, and we drive about an hour or so, hour and 15 minutes east of that, is a town called Sandestin. Destin, I guess. Sandestin is the resort that I go to. And I've been going the last 3 years with a friend of mine to play golf for a week. And this year was interesting because they were doing some maintenance on the courses, so we had to play some public courses, which was fun. I mean, they have nice places down there. But out of the 7 days, three of them, I had to wear like four layers of clothing. It was 35 degrees in the morning when you woke up, and then, 50 in the afternoon with 20 and 30 mile an hour winds, which isn't conducive to golf. So we had, we got there on a Friday. Saturday was really nice. Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday were horrendous, cold. And then Wednesday and Thursday was back up to shorts and short sleeves again. It was like 70 degrees.
So I got to ask you, Tom Shortell being the hippie biker motif and persona, what do you wear out on the golf course?
I wear what's required. Usually shorts if it's nice enough. And then, golf shirt or whatever, or a sweater if it's kind of cool, sweatshirt, whatever. But the funny part is I've been playing golf my whole life. And, if you think I look like a hippie biker now, you should have seen me 40 years ago. I mean, I had hair down to my waist and it was... So I would show up, and sometimes I would play as a single over at Eisenhower Park when I was in the area years ago. And, you have a lot of older people there and, retirees or whatever. And I'd show up with, a ponytail halfway down my back, and people would look at me like, oh, my God, I can't believe I'm going to play with this guy. But I'm actually pretty good at golf, My handicap runs between 6 and 8, depending on how much I'm practicing. And I was actually down to a 5 for a while. But so I can play, when they finally see me hit the ball, then it's a whole different story. Then you get this, after 3 or 4 holes, you get some respect. But I'll tell you a funny story. I played with this older Jewish man. His name was Abe. Nicest guy, right? And he had a cart and I had a cart. And we were playing as a twosome. And Abe wasn't very good. He was, he was older. He couldn't hit the ball, but he was so cute. He had this accent, am I allowed to do the accent thing?
Sure.
All right. So he had this accent. I think he was from Eastern Europe somewhere. Sweet old man, right? So we get to the 10th hole, and he goes, so, you know, I see you're pretty good. He says, would you like to make a little wager on the back nine? I said, sure. What do you want to play for? He says, I'll play you for a dollar. I said, all right. He says, but you got to give me strokes. I said, okay, how many strokes you want? I want 3 strokes a hole. Like, that's a lot of strokes, Abe. He goes, I'm trying to make some money here, right? So we're laughing. Anyway, I get up there, and I hit a drive, and I hit it pretty good, but I pushed it right off the side of the fairway. It was the first one I really missed, and he looks at me, he goes, if the stakes are getting to you, we can lower the wager. I thought I would wet my pants. It was fabulous, you know? Anyway, we played the rest of the round. I wound up giving him a dollar because, you know, 3 strokes a hole is just ridiculous, you know. But it was so much fun to play with him. He had such a sense of humor. It was fabulous. Yeah, but golf's a weird game that way. I mean, you know, I'll tell you a funny story about it. We got there. I wear glasses now. I wear progressive lenses, but I can't wear them when I'm playing golf because you look down and you get seasick. It's like, you know, when you wear progressive lenses, you have to walk on the stairs again without looking down, because if you look down, you're going to fall, you know, until you get used to it, right? So I haven't played with glasses, and my friend's always teasing me, like, Mr. Magoo, where'd your ball go? I don't know. You know, you're supposed to be watching for me. So I decided that I was going to have a pair of glasses made without progressive lenses, and I was going to wear them so I could see what the hell I'm doing, right? So I go down. I get these glasses made. I got my new glasses, you know. I go down there, and I'm looking down at the ball, and everything looks a little different, right? And I'm playing like I haven't played since I was 12 years old. I can't hit the ball. I'm fouling them off. I'm knocking them into the turf. And my friend's going, what is going on with you? I'm like, I don't know. Maybe it's the rust or whatever. Second day I go out there, same thing. I'm playing like my handicap's at 25. And now I'm getting mad, you know? And it dawns on me, the only thing different between this year and every other year is I'm trying to wear these glasses. So I take the glasses off, right? And now I'm playing like Tom again. You know, I'm back in, you know, in the same mode. And I'm saying to myself, this is I just spent $700 on a pair of glasses that are absolutely useless to me. Now I have to go get LASIK surgery because I can't I can't play with glasses on. So this game is starting to cost me a lot more money than it used to. But it was a lot of fun. You know, my friend Dave is struggling with his game. He's having a hard time breaking 100, and he's very funny. He refuses to take any advice, and he refuses to take lessons or practice, you know? So I'm like, what do you expect? I'm saying, I can help you, Dave. I know what you're doing. Oh, yeah, you got all the answers. I got a few, you know, maybe not all of them. You know, I'm not on tour, but, you know, I'm way better than you are. So, but it's always, you know, it's... We get up, we play golf, we have lunch, we play golf again, we have dinner, you know, then we go back and we have an adult beverage or two or six or whatever, and then it's rinse and repeat for 7 days.
So is your foursome a fivesome because you need a wine caddy?
No, we're a twosome, so we're a threesome with my wine caddy. I don't drink when I'm playing, you know, obviously. You know, it's funny, as much, you know, as I kid about, you know, my wine consumptions, I don't drink... Like during the day, you know, I don't drink on days off a lot of times, you know. If I'm home by myself, I don't crack a bottle. It's usually it's a social thing for me. And, you know, I'm like you. I socialize more than the average bear. But, you know, the bottom line is that's what it is. It's not like.
So it's interesting. My new hobby is to listen to audiobooks.
Mm-hmm.
Coincidentally, I've only listened to two.
Oh.
But the two that I've listened to is Eric Clapton.
Yeah.
And Greg Allman.
Okay.
Who,
two of my favorites.
Strangely enough, have intersected lives because Greg Allman's brother, Dwayne Allman from the Allman Brothers Band, played with
yes.
Eric Clapton. And,
yes.
And he's mentioned in the books.
Derek and the Dominoes.
But they're both abusers of alcohol and drugs.
Yeah.
So I listened to the Eric Clapton one, and really, he had a drinking and drug problem most of his life. And then you have Greg Allman that was more into drinking, but so much so that he said he used to have to keep a bottle under the bed because if he woke up with the shakes in the middle of the night, he needed to drink.
Had to quell the shakes.
To put him on level playing.
Yeah.
But that's a tough place to go. And in the Greg Allman book, he talks about that when the Allman Brothers were given the honor of going into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, he was just totally out of it. He wanted to have given a really nice speech about his brother and on and on and on, and he just wasn't there. He was there, but he wasn't there.
Yeah.
So it must be weird to have a crutch like that that you carry through your life.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's tough. I was talking about this with my friend Dave when we were down in Florida. That, you know, whether it's music, and a lot of it's music, and sports too, when you hand a 19-year-old kid $20 million, nothing good is going to happen there, you know? And they have, you got to remember too, they have really nothing to do all day. It's not like they have a job they got to go to, right? So it's noodle around on your instrument or do a rehearsal or whatever. But, you know, it's work in a sense, but it's not that hard, you know? You know, when I hear actors, you know, I remember watching, it was a late night show, whatever, it had Tom Cruise on. He had just done that movie Days of Thunder, you know, the race car. And he was talking about, yeah, it was so hard, man. I was like 12 hours and, you know, we got to keep reshooting and we're there all day, the whole thing. And Jay Leno, to his credit, went, Tom, it was 2.5 months. You know what I mean? I mean really? And you made $150 billion, you know? Really? You know, I mean, the average plumber works way harder than the average actor. I can promise you that.
So I can relate a little bit, but, you know, in the position I have here at the radio station, not only do I sell advertising, but I also work with a lot of venues, music venues. Mm-hmm. And in part of that, it's not unusual to have an interview with the artist. They call it a phoner when they call in.
Right.
And you can't believe how difficult it is to schedule somebody to be available. Now, I've been involved in concerts when we worked with Suffolk AME, the union that manages all the Suffolk County municipal workers, and they had a festival called May Day. They were actually the promoter. They paid the artist to come play at their gig.
Right.
And when we asked to get some time to do an interview, it was like pulling teeth. So then I started thinking about, you know, what's it all about? So if you think about it, and we're both guilty of this, we're lucky we get to travel a little bit, but when we're not together in the studio, sometimes we try to do a call-in to do the show, and we haven't done that in recent times. Mm-hmm. But when you're on vacation, all you have is free time, but yet I'm so busy.
Yeah, no, I know. It's crazy. You know, the thing is, I think it's the level of celebrity that you become, because I won't mention who it was, but I was at a fundraiser in East Hampton some years back with a bunch of celebrities, actors, actors, musicians, the whole thing, right? And one of the ladies, one of the customers, people who were donating money, came up to this famous musician and asked to take a picture. And he was kind of nasty with her. He said, no, you know, wouldn't do it, you know? And I'm thinking, you know what? And he's a very successful guy, very successful. And I'm saying, you know, if this was 30 years ago, you'd have taken a picture naked with this woman if she asked you, because, you know, you were trying to get, you know, you're trying to get your career going. And I think that's the thing, too. Once people get comfortable, they not turn on their fan base, but they ignore them to a certain extent. You know, I was watching a golf tournament over the weekend, and Shane Lowry, who's an Irish golfer, was leading the tournament by like 6 strokes. And in 2 holes, he just completely went off the rails. He had 2 balls in the water, the whole thing. And he wound up losing the tournament that he really only had 3 holes to go, and he would have been a coronation. He was that far ahead. And I can imagine what you could see his whole body language. His shoulders were stooped. His wife was there watching with his kid. He was so disappointed. And as he walked away, this, you know, off the last 18th green there, there was this young kid, maybe about 10 or 12 years old, with a pen and a piece of paper for him to sign an autograph. And you could see him just, he was so, so, so depressed. And he stopped and he high-fived the kid and he signed the thing and he gave him a ball. I thought, that is a guy that didn't have to do that. He's pretty secure in his career. But that's the kind of thing that, you know, you look at a guy and you go, that's his character. He's just a good, good guy, you know? And so when you get to be that famous and you start ignoring people, I don't know, man. It's something, you know, I've seen that a couple times. And, you know, I've been around celebrities my whole life. And they're just like us. Some are cool, some are not so cool, some are nice, and some are nasty. But I don't know. It's a human nature thing. You can tell. Somebody once told me years ago, and it's always stuck in my head, that you can judge somebody's character by how they treat people they don't need. And it's so true. You know, you see these people and you know, I was so touched by what he did. I was watching on TV and I'm like, wow, that guy, you know, he's ready to like stick a fork in his eye, you know, for what he just did. And he's, you know, kind enough to stop and make this little kid's day.
It's a twin-edged sword in a sense. You know, you when you start out, I have to believe part of what it's all about is becoming, in quotes, famous.
Yeah, sure.
And famous means being recognized out in the public.
Right.
However, if you're out at a restaurant with your family, a date, whatever it is, not everybody is cognizant of your privacy.
No, that's true.
It's funny. There are all sorts of personalities out there, no question about it. But there's, just like you said, some people that are very accommodating, and then there's others that aren't. But
there's ways to handle it, though. I mean, you know, when somebody approaches you, I'll give you an example. I get recognized a lot in restaurants. I used to more than I do now. But, you know, when all the restaurants are high-flying and you're always in a paper and magazine or whatever, you know, your face gets... you know, I was in a bookstore one day, and this little lady turned around, and she goes, "You're that chef. I almost didn't recognize you without that schmata on your head." You know what I mean? So you get recognized by a lot of people. And I remember, you know, people would stop in the restaurant and go, "Oh, I've been to your place." And it's always nice, you know, kind of flattering to hear that. And then one time I was with somebody I was seeing, a girlfriend at the time, and we were having one of those domestic discussions that isn't really going well, you know. And the chef comes out of the kitchen. He's, "Oh, Tom, yeah." And he sits down at the table and starts asking me about this lacquer duck thing that I did at Montauk. And now smoke's coming out of her ears, you know. And I'm like, "Ixnay on the uck day. Can't you see what's going on here, dude?" You know. And he was clueless. So finally, to the point where I said, "Listen, I you know, I'm just trying to have dinner here or whatever." But there's ways of handling that, you know. And it's not like, "Hey, get out of here, kid. You're bothering me." You know, you can't do that, you know.
It's, well, it's right. Funny because, I mean, in all situations, there's some extremes. But there are some celebrities that are thirsty in the sense that, you know, they're going out to a restaurant and they let the paparazzi know. And, when they go in and come out, there's a crowd.
Well, they say there's no such thing as bad publicity, right? But, you know, the thing, too, getting back to the Clapton and Allman thing with the, you know, abuse. Again, if you his story out of school, everybody probably knows. I mean, you know, I had my time with all that stuff when I was a kid, right? And I was broke, you know. If you would have handed me $20 million when I was 20, I wouldn't be here today, you know. It's just, how do you handle that, you know? I mean, very few people have the... You know, the experience or the wisdom, knowledge, or whatever to handle that kind of fame that happens so quickly and the money that comes with it. You know, they're, you know, unless they're really grounded or have some kind of help, you know, an advisor or whatever. How many stories do you read? They go off the rails. You know, there was that show years ago, Behind the Music. You remember that? And it was always the same story. You see the band and they're struggling and they go up and then they go down and then they come halfway back up again. You know, it's like Aerosmith, you know, real popular band. Everybody's on heroin, falling off stages, who's in rehab, whatever. They crash and burn. And then all of a sudden they decide to get sober and they resurrect their careers again. You know, now they're playing in Vegas like a what do you call it, a pop act or something, you know?
Well, it's interesting. It's curious to know if in today's world it's any easier for an up-and-coming actor or band or whatever, because there's been many a story told of how they've been taken advantage of.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And you know, it's interesting because then you also have the stage moms and dads where they've abused the privilege, yeah, along the way.
Sure. Well, I mean, how many you know, stories do you hear? I knew a guy who was a blind musician, and he wrote a song, and it was a really good tune. He was trying to get signed, and, you know, it was it's a long story, and I'm going to simplify it, but, you know, they said sign here, and they, you know, handed him a cocktail napkin instead of a contract, you know, and they took the song, and they ran with it. And, you know, you hear myriad stories about musicians getting, you know, advances to do an album, you know, and then the album hits and, you know, they own like 0.5% of the proceeds and everything's going to the manager and the, you know, the record company and all. I knew a guy who was the manager of Foreigner pretty well. His name was Bud Prager, and I used to play golf with Bud occasionally in Montauk. And at the time, I think Billy Joel had sued his manager for a bunch of money and, you know, and got it. And so all the bands were jumping on the bandwagon thinking they got screwed with their contracts. And they were making a lot of, you know, recovering a lot of money from these guys that basically screwed them. And Foreigner sued Bud and wound up having to pay him $80,000 or whatever. The whole thing backfired, you know, because he was an honest guy. You know, he was nuts, but he was an honest guy. And you don't see a lot of that with, you know, I'm friends with Steve Vai, right? And he said the greatest lesson that Frank Zappa ever gave him was don't ever, under any circumstances, sell your publishing rights. And he never did. And that's why he has the success that he has today, because, you know, regardless of what you think of his music, he owns it, you know.
So in today's world, that's the latest craze, is artists selling their publishing rights. Britney Spears, I think, just sold hers for $200 million, and I can go on and on.
Well, it's their IRA, you know?
Yeah, John Fogerty just did his, Springsteen did his, on and on and on and on. And there's, you know, great money in it. I think David Bowie actually did something that was interesting. They call it intellectual property. But he sold his going forward, and what he did was come up with some sort of deal that today we're going to figure out what it relates to the future. So he held on to it, but he sold his future.
He sold futures, like wine. Yeah, yeah, sure.
So, but talking about celebrities.
I think I could sell a bag.
The chocolate bag. Yeah. It was a great dessert.
She'd get about $100 for that, I would think.
So talking about musicians and artists, Barry Manilow reached out to us and has taken a second month of sponsorship of Playing With Fire.
Well, thank you, Barry. That's great news.
And again, Barry's playing UBS Arena on April 13th. We've been giving away tickets, and we appreciate all the interaction with our listeners who have written in to us at fire@whli.com. fire@whli.com. And I don't have the names in front of me this morning, but next week we will announce some of them. We also had a homework assignment, which was, what restaurant would you eat at on your way to see Barry Manilow at UBS Arena? And people have been writing in about that.
Oh, cool.
So, but again, we will announce some of the winners. There's still a chance to win. And if you don't have the wherewithal to wait and see if you win, you can always buy tickets at Ticketmaster.com. And it's Barry Manilow, the last Long Island concert. It's April 13th. And just to put the some semblance of reality, there have been a number of concerts that have been canceled because of some of Barry's health issues. He's, I guess, has a light form of lung cancer.
Oh, really?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
The April 13th gig at UBS Arena is still on. And again, you can try to win tickets here at Playing With Fire, which is fire@whli.com, fire@whli.com. We're going to play a song today again, and we ask for our listeners to reach out and share what the song is, and then you become entered into the pool, which would be a chance to win a pair of tickets and have a wonderful evening with Barry Manilow.
Well, you know, that's the day before my birthday, so if Barry needs me to sit in with his band, I'd be happy to do that. And I promise I'll learn the songs. I'll sit in and, you know.
So he writes the songs, and you might even play or sing the songs.
Yeah, well, I don't know about singing them, but I'll certainly play them, you know. Yeah, he's had a stellar career. I mean, the guy, and I remember we were talking last week, I guess it was the week before, he started as a jingle writer. You know, he was writing commercials and stuff, and then just hit one, Mandy, I guess it was. You corrected me. I thought it was I Write the Songs, but it was Mandy, and he went to the moon. Good for him. Good for him. It's not an easy business. Not an easy business. All right, so let's play that tune, and then we'll come back after that, and we'll continue on.
Wonderful.
the punches flew and chairs were smashed in two. There was blood and a single gunshot, but just who shot who at the Copa? Copacabana, the hottest spot north of Havana.
Here
at the Copa, Copacabana. Music and passion were always the fashion at the Copa. She lost her love.
Welcome back. You're listening to Playing With Fire on 1100 WHLI AM and 104.7 WHLI FM, Long Island's own food, wine, and lifestyle show, with your host, Tom Shawdell, chef, author, restaurateur, and Barry Manilow fan.
Yes, so that's me. I was in Sandestin, Florida, and I can't recommend the area highly enough. Other than the freak cold front that we ran into, it's really nice down here. It's an area of Florida I don't think a lot of people think about. You know, everybody thinks about Miami, Lauderdale, Orlando, whatever, Daytona, but this is up on the Panhandle, and it's about an hour east or an hour 15 minutes east of Pensacola. Great golf courses there. We played a place called Yacht Harbor or whatever it was, but the courses at Sandestin are really nice, and They have a lot of interesting little restaurants in the area. We went to this place that we go to all the time called Bijou, which is right across the street from the resort, and really cool little place, you know, kind of interesting chef, great, you know, sort of new American food. And then we discovered this new place called Tuscany, which is an Italian restaurant, obviously, in the same, like mallish area there. That was great. It was a place called Brick Tops that we found in the Grand Shops over there, which was started, I understood it was started by a guy who originally started Houston's.
Uh-huh.
And then sold his shares and got out for whatever, I guess it was partnership thing or whatever, and then started this place. That was kind of fun.
So I think I was out in, actually, Pensacola last spring. And it's a really cool area. I mean, it's interesting architecture because I guess they're known for the flooding because it's right on
the Gulf.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So all the houses are raised.
Mm-hmm.
So it's you know, it was crazy because, you know, I guess Ubered to my friend's house, and then I had to schlep my suitcases up multiple levels of stairs.
You need a Sherpa
to get into the house. But it's just a really cool area. And again, I'm not good at geography and such, but I know that if we went one way, there was water and beach.
Yeah.
And if we went the other way, it was like sort of a bay or whatever.
Yeah, you get the bay on one side and the ocean on the other.
And then the docks are very interesting because I guess on the bay side, it starts out being shallow. And then if you want to dock your boat, you got to go deep into the water so that it doesn't bottom out.
Yeah.
But it was a really, really nice time away. We were three couples. And again, my one friend, they live in New Orleans. Actually, Kerry's friend. Let's be accurate.
Yeah.
But they live in New Orleans. And I guess Pensacola isn't that far.
It's 4.5 hours, 5 hours.
Yeah,
something like
yeah,
that. Yeah,
yeah. So they know the area well. And we went to some simple places, you know, and had bar food.
Yeah.
And then we went to other restaurants that were higher end. There was one called the Grand Marlin.
Uh-huh.
And just to recant the funny story of the evening, a lot of people travel with a golf cart, at least in Pensacola.
Yeah. Sure, yeah.
So we had a 6-passenger golf cart. It was an electric golf cart, and it stayed on the driveway or whatever. And lo and behold, we going to take the golf cart instead of a car to the restaurant. It starts pouring.
Oh, boy.
It was bad. I got there. I was drenched. We get to the restaurant, and it's frigid.
Oh, yeah.
The air conditioning was like on high. So the temperature was like 40 degrees. And I'm literally shaking.
Yeah, yeah.
So we get taken to our table, and everybody's, settling in.
Uh-huh.
I go to the gift shop hoping to find something to wear. I'm really in a bad
sweatshirt or something.
And I, for whatever reason, I couldn't find something that I wanted, and just it was miserable.
You toughed it out?
I toughed it out, but the food was incredible.
Was it?
And it was a wonderful restaurant. And again, they have multiple extremes or whatever. And it
you talking about Grand Marlin? What it's called?
Yeah,
I'll check it out. I gotta check it out.
But that was that was in Pensacola, and it's interesting. And the community that you were in was called
Sandestin. So I got a story for you. We get there, right? And Dave and I are like Felix and Oscar. You know, I guess who Oscar is, right? I mean, I'm not as bad as that. I'm pretty fastidious as far as, you know, keeping stuff around me neat or whatever. But I I'm not crazy if I have 3 books on my, you know, coffee table or, you know, a napkin or whatever. He's nuts, right? So Dave looks in and he likes to have at night, he likes to have a small glass of Grand Marnier with an ice cube in it. So he opens up the freezer. You got to hear this great. Opens up the freezer and he goes to me, there's no ice tray in the freezer. I'm like, Eureka. I don't even know what to say, right? He goes, no, there's no ice tray in here. We got to get, you know, he says, if we're around, you know, we make the next trip to Walmart or whatever, we got to pick up an ice tray. I'm like, all right. So I'm not even thinking about it because I don't really care one way or the other, right? So 2 days later, we're heading up to, he needed golf balls or something. So we're heading up and he's, oh, stop at Walmart. We'll pick up some, he needed another six pack of beer or whatever. Speak of beer, and we'll see if they have the ice trays, right? So I've been hearing about this ice tray thing for like 3 days. So now I'm looking all over Walmart. We can't find the ice tray. Finally, we call some guy over. You guys have ice trays? Oh, I don't know, but there's a kitchen, you know, supplies section over there in aisle five. So we go to aisle five, and he goes, oh, here they are, right? So he picks up. I don't know if you know about ice trays, too, but they come in packs of two. And this $8 or whatever, and he's appalled that these ice trays are $8. So I'm like, just get the tray, you know. We get the trays, so we're on a checkout line, right? And you know that thing that brings the, you know, the all your items up to the cashier, it's rolling. So he's got the ice trays on it with the six pack of beer. And there's this lady behind him. Now I'm behind him, I'm just waiting for him to get through. This lady behind me with her husband. And she goes, oh, I see you buying ice trays. And so Dave goes into this whole explanation about how we get to the condo. We're paying all this money. You know, I open a thing. I like to have Grand Marnier, you know, with the ice in it, but there's no cubes, this, that, the other thing. He's carrying on. And she goes, why didn't you buy a bag of ice? I look at him, and he looks at me like two semi-intelligent people couldn't figure this out. And he looks at her, and he goes, because I'm stupid, and it's too late. Thought I would wet my pants. I'm telling you, I was in the parking lot, bent over. I couldn't get back. I said, I can't believe we didn't just think to get a bag of ice at 7-Eleven. You know?
So eventually I want to get into talking about St. Patrick's Day, but let's zoom in on this ice tray scenario. So first of all, there's a lot of variety of ice trays these days, but let's start.
They don't have that crank handle anymore.
That's where I'm going. So let's start from the beginning.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, in the old days, there was no ice tray because you put the ice, a cube of ice, and I'm talking about a big cube,
yeah,
in your freezer,
right.
And that's what cooled.
That's why they had ice picks.
The refrigerator.
Yeah.
Okay. So then I guess we got a little modern, and there was a refrigerator section and then a freezer section.
Yes.
And somebody decided that there's going to be a metal tray,
mm-hmm,
with grids that if you pull an arm, it cracks the ice or
separates it.
It separates it, or you get the whole thing comes out.
Right.
Because that used to happen all the time. So in today's world, somebody then discovered that you could use plastic instead of this old contraption.
Right, and then you could twist it.
And if you twisted it or bent it,
right,
the ice cubes would fall.
Right.
Okay, now we go forward. Now people have bottles and metal thermoses to hold their beverage.
Right.
But an ice cube is too big to go down the neck,
right,
of the thermos.
Yeah.
So now they have straw cubes and all sorts of crazy things.
Oh, yeah.
So if you go into Home Goods or TJ Maxx or Marshall's, there's a whole section on frozen ice devices.
Well, we only found the one, and it was just, and especially me, I'm in the restaurant business. You know, I know crushed ice cubes, you know, big ones, small ones, round ones, big triangles, whatever. You would have thought that one of us would have said, let's go get a bag. You know, neither one. It was just, anyway, one of those moments, you know, I just couldn't get it back. You know, sometimes when you're tired and you start laughing, it just, you know, feeds on itself and it gets weirder and weirder, you know. So it was quite the moment. Anyway, so you want to talk about St. Patrick's Day?
Yeah, so St. Patrick's Day, as you said, is March 17th, which I believe this year is a Tuesday.
Is it a Tuesday?
And I guess there's not a lot of tolerance these days for the mess and the immaturity of what has happened in the past.
Well, yeah.
So
you're talking about the celebration.
The celebration, yes. Yeah. But I'm just the luckiest guy because I got to march in the St. Patrick's Day parade last year.
Really?
And I was given the honor for one of the councils of Ireland to carry the American flag down Fifth Avenue.
How did you wiggle your way into that?
So that's interesting. So I hang out with this group of guys. I've talked about them before. The Band of Undistinguished Gentlemen.
Mm-hmm.
Within the group are a number of Hibernians.
The dreaded Hibernians.
Which I'm not allowed to join because...
you don't come from Hibernia.
I have not proven that I have any percentage of Irish blood. they go, well, what country are you from? You need a little bit of Irish blood in
yeah,
you.
Yeah, yeah.
So we'll get there, but I'm still given the honor. But what's really cool is the St. Patrick's Day Parade. First of all, Fifth Avenue goes north to south.
Right.
But the parade goes south to north.
Oh, goes the wrong way.
So that's pretty cool. But
there's an Irish joke in there somewhere. You know.
I'm not smart enough to find it. But and you walk, again, up Fifth Avenue and past St. Patrick's Cathedral and stuff. And we got a fill-in last year because Cardinal Dolan had been out there, but we got somebody that was relieving him so that he could do what he had to do. And I guess this year there will be a new cardinal, and I wonder if we'll get to parade before him. But my buddy Joe is like the general of our group. And again, there's actually people from Ireland that fly in and for the different districts or councils, and there's a special banner that's a vertical banner that's carried by somebody else. And then there's like the mayor and different political officers from the village or council. And this has been going on for hundreds of years. It's really wild.
Yeah.
And it's very serious. But we took the train in, Joe and I, to meet up with the gang.
Right.
And there's a lot of pre-gaming that goes on. I got to tell you, I never saw so many firemen and police officers in my life.
Well, that's the stereotype, you
but
know.
But it's just a good old day. And, yeah, and yeah. Again, you know, you got to appreciate those people in our lives.
Of course,
because,
yeah.
You know, when I always say when somebody sees a cop on in Times Square leaning up against the building, you know, eating a donut and drinking coffee,
yeah, sure.
You know, oh, my God, he's getting paid for that? Well, when I get into trouble and I need help,
yeah.
I'm sure glad he's there. So
every time I see a cop, I say, I appreciate you guys. You
yes. Know? I I was on 7-Eleven on Saturday, and there was a police officer walking into 7-Eleven, and I'm always talking to these guys. So I say, how was it out there the past couple of days? And
yeah.
He was a little bit of a smart ass. Snowy.
Yeah, right. It's like the fish business.
He goes,
business
but we made out okay. But so we're on the train going into the city, and we have to talk about the train also, because there's a new ticketing system.
Yeah, I know. I got to go in today. Yeah.
We'll talk about it. But we're on the train going into the city, and there's a bunch of Nassau County police officers that are going to be marching in the parade on the train.
Right.
And I know a couple of people from my networking, and we're talking or whatever. And then we get into the city, and Joe and I are walking from Penn Station. I think we had to go to like 42nd Street or something and Fifth Avenue to wait, and then we were going to be escorted onto the parade route.
Right.
Well, we couldn't get across Broadway. God was with me that day. He puts me amongst the people that I was on the train with, the police officers. And I said, you know, can you help us?
Can you walk me over?
Across the street. And this was very important because we had to get to the bar where we were going to be pre-gaming.
Imagine that.
But we get where we have to go, and we wait all till it's time for us to go and everything. Just an exciting day. Mm-hmm. But now to segue, I went into the city the other day, and there's these new regulations with train tickets.
Yeah.
So first of all, I'm old school. I like going to the train station and buying a ticket.
Yeah.
So I go there. I used to buy a 10-tripper,
right,
which was 5 round trips essentially. No longer exist.
No, huh?
They have a monthly, a weekly,
yeah,
or a one-way or two-way.
Right.
However, that be said,
mm-hmm,
whatever ticket you buy that day as a single passage expires that day.
Really?
The reasoning behind it is conductors sometimes don't get to be able to walk through the train, and there's a lot of unpaid.
Yeah, I often wondered about
passages.
That, yeah.
So now, say I buy a ticket in the morning and I get distracted during the day, and then don't go into the city.
Right.
Stu, You're out of luck.
Well, that's the reason they're doing it. I mean, they're giving you the conductor excuse, but, you know.
But again, if I'm buying something so that I'm prepared for my trip later in the day and right. then don't go, that's wrong.
Well, you know, look, it's business. I mean, I used to tease, you know, people ask me, you know, my policy on gift certificates. And I said, well, I sell them to you and I pray that you lose it, you know, because now you have the money and no product. You know, it's the same thing. I mean, they used to issue liquor licenses yearly, right? So you buy it for a year, it was $700, whatever. Then they came up with this idea, well, we're gonna issue them for 3 years. Why is that? Well, because most restaurants go out of business in a year. So they get 3 years worth of revenue for 1 year worth of use, you know? And it's always about that.
So the reality, though, is there's no reason to have a conductor anymore because unless you're buying a ticket on the train, if you bought a ticket before you get on the train, it's no good when you come off the train.
No, but you can, you know, if the reason to have conductors is if I get on a train in Hicksville and I get off at Mineola, you know, my ticket's to Mineola, if there's no conductor, I can take it into Penn Station and, you know, and use up all that other revenue. So I think that, you know, I always, you know, it's like when I think about that kind of thing, I always think follow the money, you know, and figure out who's profiting from this. It's like government. I always think about the narrative, you know, who's benefiting from this. Crazy. But you always gotta ask the 10 questions that, you know, that are in your head about it. You know, anyway, enough of that.
There has to be a happy medium, but at any rate, the St. Patrick's Day Parade is really, really, really an exciting, incredible day. A lot of camaraderie. Again, we did some pre-gaming, and then we did the parade, and then we went back to the bar we were at. And
post-gaming?
Post-gaming, and I had bangers and mash, which I guess is a...
sausages.
It's like an Irish sausage with mashed potatoes or whatever.
Yeah, you know, when I think of... I'm always asked every year to come up with a menu for Paddy's Day. And it's kind of always the same thing. It's what people expect. And when you look, I've said this before, but when you look for inspiration on Irish dishes, and this is no knock against the Irish people or their cooking or whatever. I mean, there's some really fine cooking going on in Ireland. And, you know, it was always the, you know, kind of Ireland and England were always the redheaded stepchild of cuisine for all those years, you know. And I know my mother's from Liverpool. I mean, it was... you know, try and find great English cuisine, you know, a cookbook 20 years ago, you couldn't find it. But then guys like Gordon Ramsay, you know, and Pierre Marco White or whatever. So you have good, you know, food there now. But as far as traditional Irish dishes, you know, it's not a lot. Not a lot to do. There's some salmon stuff, you got cold cannon, you got cabbages, you got, you know, potatoes, you got, you know, corned beef, lamb stew. That's about the short list, you know. You try and get deeper than that, and, it, you know, you know, every time I would look up on the internet, you know, top 20 Irish, you know, traditional Irish dishes, there's always six. You know, there's never 20. It's like, it's a short list and a fun list. I mean, you know, I'm not knocking it, but it's hard to get beyond that. So what we do is we try and, you know, we try and expand on, you know, I'll do an Irish stew. Maybe I'll make it with beef and then I'll do a carved lamb rack on the side or... you know, or vice versa, you know, because everybody eats beef. But, yeah, it's hard to find. They do have some seafood stuff because it is an island, you know, and, you know, they have some great fish and a lot of salmon, you know, great smoked salmon.
Now, you mentioned cold cannon. What is that?
Cold cannon is basically mashed potatoes with cabbage in it. It's, you know, they use a lot of cabbage over there. Stuffed cabbage is another thing that, you know, you could put on. But, you know, you got to kind of find general acceptability. You know, there's these ethnic things that everybody seems to want on menus. And I'm noticing now over the years that, you know, I work with this manager who actually just left the club this year, Don Molitor. Great guy. Just a very high quality human being. Consummate club manager. He's been doing it his whole life. He's very good at it. But he was steeped in... the club menus, and you know, we always kid each other that, you know, I come in with this restaurant headset, and he's got a club headset, so if you add us up and divide by two, you probably have the right formula. And, you know, he would say things, well, we have to have this, have to have that, and I would say, you know, I'm like pancakes on a men's, you know, golf tournament. Nobody eats them. You know, we're just making them and throwing them out, so why are we doing it? And it's the same thing with some of the stuff on the Paddy's Day menu. You know, people will eat corned beef, obviously, because it's traditional, and they'll eat lamb and the stew and stuff. If I have potatoes over here and cold cannon over here, most people eat the potatoes. They don't go for the cold cannon. Or they won't eat smoked salmon or, you know. It's,
and what's your take on corned beef egg rolls or Reuben egg rolls and stuff like that?
I don't really have an opinion. I mean, I know people try that stuff. If, you know, if it's an Irish pub, it's kind of a fun thing, I guess. It wouldn't be anything I would ever make personally. But, you know, that doesn't make me right or wrong. It just, it's not my thing. You know, I don't make egg rolls anyway. But bottom line is, I've done them. I've done egg rolls. But I tend to do, you know, more traditional, you know, things if I'm going to do that, which I don't do anymore. But, you know, when I was doing, sometimes I'll do a little less of a serious menu, a pub or place. And, you know, we used to do a spring roll. I used to do it with tuna, you know, fresh tuna. So it's all in play. I mean, you know, if you're doing a corned beef egg roll or whatever, you know, with some kind of a mustard dip, I get it. You know, I get it. Have you had those?
No, but I will admit that our buddy Smokin' Al, our other sponsor of
Love Al.
Playing with Fire, he's known for his pulled pork egg rolls.
Mm-hmm.
Which
yeah.
he says is Southern flavor in every bite.
I gotta love Al. Yeah, like pulled pork. I could see that in an egg roll. You know, I used to do a pulled pork quesadilla years ago, which was kind of a big thing at Coolfish. You know, we were looking for some less serious things to put on.
Talking about less serious, what about your phony bologna sushi in the day?
Well, that was done as a spoof, and it turned into a. Yeah, I was kind of in cahoots with Peter Giannotti from Newsday, and we decided to do it. I'm trying to think of the circumstances. It was some kind of – I was just opening Beju at the time, and it was a National Sushi Day or some kind of silly thing. And he says, you know, why don't you come up with something completely ridiculous and, you know, we'll put it in the paper. So I came up with the bologna sashimi and the bologna sushi, and we were saying it was made right down the block from by a bologna maker who, you know, came from the old country and makes, you know,
so
organic
bologna.
So what
do you use instead of wasabi? Guacamole?
No, you use mustard, you know, like mustard. So anyway, it went in the paper, and then I got people calling about it, and because I said, you know, I only make a certain amount of bologna sushi a day. It's like a special edition thing. And I was getting people calling the restaurant trying to reserve the bologna sushi. What started out as a ha-ha-ha thing turned into a nightmare for me because people actually believed I was doing it.
You know, my mind goes to a Wagyu hot dog sushi, you know, because, you know.
You have a sick mind still.
Listen, who am I talking to? You're the guy that came up with phony bologna sushi.
Well, yeah, but as a joke, not as a real thing.
And the other crazy thing I remember... That guy Butch O'Malley from the Pastrami King family and Dover Foods, who does a lot of catering, at one point he had Twinkie stuffing for Thanksgiving.
Yeah, that's a little strange. You know, Twinkies were one of my favorite things as a kid, and I don't know if it's because I'm an adult. They don't taste the same. I don't think they're made the same way they were made back then. I tried to do. I'm going back a while now, about 12 years ago. I got this idea in my head. You know, when tasting plates were coming out, you know, you're doing like three types of ceviche or whatever, you know. I decided to do a hostess dessert.
Yes, that was really good.
Remember that? And I made a mini Twinkie, a mini cupcake, a mini snowball, and I think a mini devil dog or yodel or something. I mean, a major pain in the ass. I mean,
aside from your ice cream being a little too frozen, you had good desserts.
Well, I had, you know, some people would complain about that. But yeah, it was kind of a fun thing. It was it reminded me of my childhood, you know, and it was kind of a nostalgic thing. But it was a nightmare to make. Twinkies aren't easy to make.
Did it come with some sort of float, a beverage or something, root beer or something?
Might have. I don't remember. Yeah, I might have done that too. But you know, you always, you know, as a chef, you're always looking for, you know, new kind of things to present to people. And you know, we're in a fabulous culinary era because everything's out there now. I mean, you have so much talent chef-wise and so many ingredients to work with and so many ideas that it's just this constellation of great ideas out there, you know? So you're always looking for your little niche in there. And sometimes you find it and sometimes you blow it.
And I do. So, you know, you mentioned that you and I are out and about a lot.
Right.
So in my journeys to 7-Eleven, which is a prominent place you might find Stu Schrager.
It's out, but not about.
There was a display of Twinkies the other day.
Really?
And there was cappuccino cream. There was birthday cream. There's all sorts of varieties
it's
now.
It's sacrilege. I mean, Twinkie's a Twinkie, man. You got to, you know, I'm kind of a traditionalist. I guess it's fun. But the bottom line is the regular Twinkie that I remember as a kid doesn't taste the same to me. And I don't know if it's because my palate's different than it was when I was 9, but I don't know.
I know growing up, I grew up in a pretty spiritual, not religious, but spiritual family.
Yeah.
And within the Jewish life, you would celebrate the Sabbath, Shabbat, and it would be sundown on Friday till sundown on Saturday.
Right.
So the family would go to temple Friday night for services, which was a real conflict because the Brady Bunch was on and the Partridge Family, and I would miss it.
Listen, if it comes between God and the Brady Bunch, you know, that's a tough
one. It was
one.
A problem.
That's a tough one.
But then Saturday morning was what they call junior congregation. Mm-hmm. And if you went to junior congregation, you got a certain amount of points.
Right.
But you also got a devil dog.
But it also screwed up the whole cartoon thing, too. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, but, Quick Draw McGraw was Saturday morning.
But I got multiple devil dogs.
They're baiting you to come into services. You know, that's brilliant, actually. You know? Who wouldn't want to go? Me, I'm going.
So, you know, sometimes if they ran out of devil dogs, there might have been a ring ding.
I love a ring ding. You know, those things were, you know, part of your childhood. I remember the hostess cherry pies.
But what's the difference between a ring ding and a yodel?
It's the shape. It's the same stuff, you know. It's just the shape, you know. I prefer ring dings. I like that, you know, the yodel thing. I don't know. It was like an egg roll, you know, a chocolate egg roll. Yeah, fun stuff. And all that nostalgic stuff is so, I don't know, the older I get, the more I'm interested in it. Like, I'll drive past my old house that I grew up in, you know, when I'm in the area, and I'm there fairly frequently. And it's funny how it looks so small to me now, you know. My parents raised 6 kids in a 4-bedroom cape, you know, with an unfinished basement, and somehow pulled it off. I have 2 homes, and I don't have enough room for my stuff, you know, and I'm basically by myself. You know, it's like, it's crazy, right?
Tell me about it.
Nuts. Anyway, so we're getting to the end here, Stu. We're going to have to talk about, it's a good thing we have time. We'll have to talk about food from Patty's Day next week.
Well, let's just get a little bit into it. But what, you know, the traditional St. Patrick's beverage is beer.
Right.
An ale and whatever. I'm confused about where green beer comes from and what that's all about.
It comes from number 12 dye.
But I got to tell you, there's a lot of artistry in pouring a Guinness because people put shamrocks or... My local bartender the other day, the matron, she gives me a heart in my Guinness.
Really?
I was very touched.
Wow. You better not let, you know, who find out about this. You know, it'll be big trouble over there in Belmore. All right. Well, listen, we got to get going. And that show went quick, isn't it? And fast.
It did.
Yeah, yeah. Let's give a little thanks to Barry Manilow and to my buddy Smokin' Al. For their support, we appreciate it, and we're going to close the show with Tom's 3 Keys to Life like we normally do. Life is too short to drink bad wine. Treat every meal like it was your last, and keep chocolate in your life as important as sex and pizza. And we will see you next week, and we'll chat about corned beef.
Come on now, everybody, get ready for a treat. It's time for stepping out for something mighty good to eat. You looking for atmosphere? Well, they got it happening here. They're doing barbecue the way it ought to be. Bring your sister, brother, significant other. Bring all your pals. There's always something smoking at Smoking Al.
Introducing Smoking Al's new fantasy platters. The whole gang can have fun feasting on each one of these enormous oversized platters, whether at home or in the dining room. Try the new Macho Nacho, the Bow Wow Wow, the Poo Poo Platter, the Caesar Pleaser, barbecue egg rolls, chicken wings, and a whole lot more. Smoking Al's Massapequa Park. For details, call 516-799-4900. 3900. And remember, there's always something smoking at Smokin' Al's.
There's always something smoking at Smokin' Al's.